Okay, we give an overview of optimization activities in WSEG. It's a broad overview and it will be very fast. I cannot go into much detail. The motivation is in practice something that you already are very familiar with, the fact that if you extrapolate today the requirements to the estimate of the available resources up to the luminosity LHC scale, you have a big mismatch. So far, LSC experiments were able to reasonably fit into the resources, and they could even live with some degree of inefficiency, like in job scheduling, in data access, in the usage of storage, etc. But there is an increasing pressure to be able to be more with less. And as I said, this is an absolute necessity in the years to come. So just to give a very few numbers, the number of collisions per branch crossing will increase up to 200 from something which is around 40 today. The event rate will increase by a factor 10. The detectors will be much more complicated with many more channels. So one can estimate that, for example, in a year, the amount of raw data which is collected, which today is of the order of 50 petabytes, will increase to something like 600 petabytes. And the CPU needs will increase something like 60 times. So these numbers have very large uncertainties, but they give the idea. So to be able to do a high luminosity LSC, you need revolutionary changes. And it's clear that the most important changes will have to happen in the experiment software, like have a faster simulation, faster reconstruction algorithms, smaller data formats, use more resources. But, this is to show that in practice the decrease of the price, the estimated decrease of the price of the CPU power is absolutely not enough to cover the increase in the resources. So WCG will have a role anyway, because it can have an impact in things like developing optimization and performance tools, investigate the efficiency of the computing system, find the leading causes for inefficiency, etc. And also develop cost models will be very useful to be able to understand better how much throughput can be obtained by a certain amount of money. And why not also to propose and coordinate projects or prototypes to test new ideas. So currently in WCG there is a very small team of 2.5 FTE, so who is dedicated to this kind of activities. And this is the grand summary of the activities. So apart from just keeping an eye of what's happening in the community, there was a development of memory profiling tools. We have been studying experiment workflows using Elasticsearch infrastructures for CMS and Atlas in particular. And there are people in the team who have also a role in organizing sessions on workflow performance or on general performance in the HSF workshops or in the WCG workshops. For example, some work that has been done was to run LSC jobs in the cloud infrastructure that was used to test for the third procurement exercise of CERN. It was an extension. It was to test the idea of extending the tier zero with the cloud resources. For example, LSCB was able to run very, very well, mostly Monte Carlo workflows, but also other kinds of workflows like reconstruction, stripping, and merge. There is also work to help LSCB optimizing the core software, like doing debugging, validation, timing and profiling of the code, in particular focusing on Gaudi Hive, which is a multi-threaded framework that LSEB and also Atlas are adopting. And the main goal for LSEB is to be prepared for round three, so to increase in particular the HLT throughput for round three. This kind of work could be easily extended also to other experiments. Then there were software performance studies focused at finding bottlenecks and inefficiencies in the software itself. For example, FOM Tools is a tool which allows to understand how memory is allocated. And it was found, for example, that large fractions of allocated memory are never used at all. So, for example, just by making easy changes to Atlas jobs, it was possible to reduce the amount of allocated memory by almost 1 gigabyte. So this is the kind of things that you can get from this tool. Other studies were, for example, to evaluate the impact of X32 ABI, which is an interface which allows to use 64-bit commands with 32-bit pointers, which resulted in an estimated gain of 50% in memory, 15% in memory in Gen4. Understanding also the fragmentation of the memory, because it was found that in HAP software most of the allocations last for very little and are very small. Then there was a study about Auto FDO, which is a tool developed by Google, which in practice allows to optimize the compilation of the software using information from the runtime, so you can feed back this information and compile again, which resulted in an increase of 30% of the performance of Gen4. Then there were also studies to understand failures in Atlas jobs in the HLT, which were resulted in different tuning of the virtual machines in the US, which solved the problem for Atlas. Then we investigated using hardware counters differences between performance for different micro architectures, Haswell and Ivy Bridge, for example. So this is just to give you a feeling of the kind of work which is done. Then there is another type of work which is on the optimization of the workflows. For example, to understand first of all what kind of jobs experiments run, how many resources they need, and understand also the behavior of the infrastructure. For example, can you use experiment jobs to measure the speed of the CPUs or of the sites? And this work is easy to be done using Elasticsearch databases. They exist for Atlas and CMS. They were developed independently, but basically they have the same functionality. And you can do also, for example, passive benchmarking. You can measure the speed of the CPU, of a CPU, for example, by looking at the CPU time per event of similar jobs running on different CPUs. You can compare. This can be done on the grid and also at specific sites. Sometimes on the grid you don't have enough information. Actually, you don't know, for example, if SMT is on or off. You can only make assumptions. Just to illustrate, for example, these are different job types in Atlas. In the left plus are the CPU times per event for different job types, like event generation, simulation, etc., reconstruction. And in the right, you see the distributions of the efficiency. The message is just these different types of jobs behave very differently. So can you use them all to, for example, to measure the speed of the CPUs? So we did an analysis, the basic assumption is that the CPU time per event is inversely proportional to the speed of the CPU, so you can do the math and do a minimum likelihood fit, and in practice fit these speed factors, which are called KI, which, for example, depend on the CPU model. And you can compare, for example, different values of the speed factors when measured in different types of jobs, and you see that they are strongly correlated. For example, you see the speed factors measured on pile up plus Rico jobs versus FGen jobs in Atlas and other correlations. And if you see that pretty consistent, if you look at the speed factor for CPU A measured using different types of jobs, the spread is about 5%. So they give pretty consistent measurements. In CMS at the time, you didn't have the CPU model in Elasticsearch, so it was possible to do the analysis only by sight, but the concept is exactly the same. You can get the same kind of precision. Then something that Domenico showed yesterday was application of this kind of analysis to the Atlas Tier 0 that allowed to compare, for example, the speed factors to the Aspect 06 per core. And you see that, as he said yesterday, the correlation is pretty good, apart from the fact that Opsiteron is way off, and Aswell looks better than Ivy Bridge for real jobs. Another analysis that was done by request of Atlas was to look at the inefficiencies due to job failures, so wall clock time wasted on failed jobs. It was found that for the period considered, there was about 12% of the work clock time wasted on failed jobs. We found out where were the leading causes and fed this information back to Atlas, which now can use it to understand where to put the effort. Then there is another line of work, which is done by people closer to the computer center, to correlate, for example, information about from the jobs and the storage logs to find out inefficiencies and bottlenecks. They also did a passive benchmark in the tier zero, and they also got precision. So basically, they could measure the speed of each single worker node, and they got precisions of a few percent. But what is even more interesting is that they are working on a machine learning-based classification of the jobs to understand, to divide them in categories, to understand if they're limited by the CPU or limited by the fact that they all want to access a single file or they want to access the disk of the same box, etc. So this is work in progress still. But the idea is that this can be used to assign, for example, in a better way, jobs to nodes. To conclude my part of the presentation, I just wanted to give you an overview of the WSEG activities on optimization of the usage of the computing resources, which covers both the core software itself and the way the jobs are run on the distributed infrastructure. And I think also the important thing is to be able to prototype new ideas. And it's very useful if the experiments can use this information to implement it and get improvements. That's all for my part.
Are there any quick questions as we change over?
In the second part of this talk, I will cover one particular activity of UP Group, which is harvesting cycles of service nodes. As Andrea already said, the requirements for HLLHD era is quite high for computing, and you can't just stick with the existing compute model. And what you have to do is you have to find new ways of exploiting maybe unused or inefficiently used resources. And one of the major motivations of this work was the observation of the relatively low average CPU activity on the storage nodes. And we knew that the disk nodes on many computer centers, in particular at CERN, are mostly the same as the normal compute nodes plus a big disk shelves. So it's not something you can't use for computing. It's almost the same CPU, and we thought that it may be a good idea to see how much we can squeeze out of it. In particular, CERN has quite a big farm of disk nodes. It's a bit less than 1,000 as far as I know. And most of them have 32 cores and 64 gigs of RAM, which is quite good for compute payloads. So the major questions we had is whether we can use these additional resources. And the second one is whether this will actually impact maybe somehow the primary purpose of these nodes as serving as a disk storage resource. And are there any underutilized resources, and what value this corresponds to? So I will cover three of these 4 points in my talk. The first we started with observation of relatively heavily loaded EOS cluster for ALICE, but for the other experiments it's almost the same, EOS cluster at CERN. And that's what we had. So the cluster was given away 64 gigabytes per second, so it's not bits, it's bytes. And most of the CPU, the aggregate CPU time is just idle. This bluish area is just idle CPU. And then we identified a hotspot node that was given away 200 something megabytes per second. And it was loaded more than the average, but still this bluish area here is just idle CPU time. So we thought that maybe it's a good idea to use some payload that could use that without interfering with a disk IO. We immediately came up with a test bed. We had four, in fact five, but the head node is more or less decent. The four disk nodes that were retired from the older EOS cluster for ALICE once again. They were more or less okay, but a bit dated disk nodes with 22 disks. We have four of them in the cluster. All of them had a 1 gigabit connection, and we had more or less decent nodes, physical machines for IO generation, so they act like a client. I want to make a statement here that we tried to start with clients on virtual machines, but that wasn't a good choice. So for that, the results we had was very deviating, and so you can't predict amount of the network you can squeeze out of the virtual machine. So we ended up requesting physical machines as a client, so we can have a predictable, very high load on the network level. So these hosts here are physical machines. And the utility we use for IO generation is the Exodus stress, very useful tool from the EOS package. And as a compute payload, we are running Condor. We specifically for that, we used no virtualization, no containerization, no C groups, no nothing. It was just a Condor client on a disk node with low priority, not just high, nice level, low priority compute payloads. The compute payload, we use the volunteer computing VLHC at home, which is mostly the theory app of that is mostly Monte Carlo, is strictly CPU bound, produces almost zero IO activity. And the counting of the volunteer computing is not as good as we thought, is given the average results, but it's hard to tell for a given node or a given user how much he contributed. So for the accounting, we use the built-in Linux accounting, and the figure below shows the amount of the CPU time normalized by HapSpecs. We have gathered on the idle disk nodes. So it's pretty for each of the nodes is somehow about 600 CPU hours a day. We started to play with a loaded test bed, and we generated a load and compared how much it behaves with payload, the compute payload on and off. So the picture above is you can see the most of the CPU time, over 80% of the CPU time is occupied by the payload volunteer computing. And in the second picture, the payload is off, so most of the time the CPU does nothing, it's idle. The I/O numbers we have gathered is almost the same, so for the read performance is exactly the same, the write performance deviates like a little bit, but this is the standard error, in fact, it's the same numbers. And at that point, we realized that we are limited by the network, not by the disk subsystem on the disk nodes. So we started to play with very high-loaded local disk payload. So we basically spawned as many processes as disks on a node, constantly reading from all the disks. And we have achieved for a 22-disk node, we have achieved almost 24 megabytes per disk in parallel reads, which is half a gigabyte per second from all of the disk subsystem, which is as much as it could handle. And from a compute payload off and on, you can see there is no difference in I/O performance. You can spot a very, very little notch here. At this time, the compute payload was started because it started the Condor, started the Monte Carlo generators. But as soon as this transition period gone, the performance remains stable and the same. So no interference between disk and I/O performance. Disk and compute performance. Also, the memory is one of the things you would care about. These are memory footprints with compute payloads on and off, and you have roughly see no difference. For the free memory, there's almost nothing. But anyways, free memory is wasted memory. So most of the memory is used as other buffers. Or cache. So as you can see, the buffered space allocated for the compute payloads on and off is almost the same. The cache size with payload on is more stable, so it's not allocating the allocated memory. But the used memory also stays the same, so it's almost no deviation. Then we, because the results we gathered were quite promising, so we requested a more decent recruitment, a single, very modern disk node with 48 spinning disks and two SSDs, but we're not using the SSDs, they are just for operating system and swap. And so that's the spec of the disk node we got, and we decided to use a single disk node so we can load with our I/O generators to load all the network on the node and see how much our compute payload will affect. So that's the performance of the test. It's the XRoot test we used for that is writing data and then reading that back. So this is the more than 80% of the CPU is used as the compute performance, compute payload. And you can see that the write is about 5 gigabits per second and read is 8 gigabits per second. And with the compute payload off, the results are the same. So the performance, the maximum performance for read and write is exactly the same, and most of the CPU time is just wasted on this. This is probably because the modern hardware allows you to write directly, to move data from disk to a network and back without actually loading CPU at all. So this is the memory footprint once again. So there's absolutely no difference. The slope here is as we started the test. So then the memory consumption remains the same, being the compute load on off. And the only difference you can notice, in fact, is the interrupt rate. So with compute below, the interrupt rate is a bit less than two times of the without the payload. But anyways, it doesn't affect performance of the I/O operations. So the conclusions we have is that the storage resources we have could be very efficiently used for CPU-bound compute payloads. And for typical I/O payloads, in production, we can expect 80%, more than 80% of the CPU resources of the disk nodes to be used as a compute payload. This resulted in a so-called BEER working group at CERN. So this is this stands for Batch on Use Extra Resources, with the people from the compute, the disk, and up groups at CERN working together to come up with some plan for processing further with this. So we want to structure this in a way it's shown on the slide, and we want to have a better isolation of the CPU payload so that it doesn't, we guarantee that it doesn't interfere with disk anyways. So we use EOS and the payload in the containers. That's the idea how we could do that was using the Docker images, which is now in the process of configuration, because we have to merge basically the configuration for compute node and the configuration for the disk node, which is being handled. And the what we can get out of it, I had a slide with basically numbers in euros, but I think it's better to give away numbers of in terms of how much hep specs you can gain. And so in a very worst case, we can have 40% on a very, very high loaded nodes, 40% of resources. This is equivalent to 300 compute nodes from what we had at CERN. And in real real scenario, we have, if we have 80% of the CPU resources, this is equivalent of more than 600 CPU nodes you're getting for free, essentially, by just using the idle CPU cycles on disk nodes. Thank you.
We have time for maybe one quick question as we switch.
Do you see already on the market the tendency to go to these hyper-convertible systems that you combine CPU and storage in one box instead of what we have at the moment, a more strict distinction between two? And in this case, would it be possible or would we benefit if there is some kind of locality that the data is processed by the local processor? I don't know whether the storage systems like Dcache can ensure this, probably not, but well, so what the next years, what will come? We will have one box for all?
We know that there are the hyperconverged systems offered by HP and IBM, but the answer is that for the time being at least, they are more complicated than what we have here. So there's a complex system, it's more expensive, and EOS in particular is just a little different from the storage they offer. So there is no specifically a hot or cold storage. So the EOS is like a dynamic thing, and you can't predict which node will be the very highly loaded and which won't. So we think that our approach for the time being is much easier for both the computer centers. If they can simply use the resources they have now without buying a new hardware. And in a few years, we will see. We'll see.
All right, I think maybe we should take the remaining questions offline. Let's thank the speaker again.